Meet Reed L. Rosenthal, rancher, number one best-selling award-winning author, and unabashedly, unapologetically, on the right side of the outstanding issues of our generation. But don't try and fence him in. Sometimes his positions will surprise you, because Reed is definitely his own man with his own opinions. You might love him, you might hate him, but you won't be able to stop listening. Step over to the right side with Reed.
So imagine that your spouse has been looking for a job for a year, maybe two. Actually, given this economy, maybe three. And she or he comes in the door one day with a big smile on their face and says, "Honey, I have a job. At long last, I have a job." And you go, "Oh, that's terrific. That's great. We'll be able to make our mortgage payment. We might even pay some down on our credit cards. Wow. So how did you get it?" "Oh, no problem. I gave him a post-dated check for $278,000. You look at them, your eyes wide, your jaw agape. You say, "What?" "Yes, I gave him a post-dated check for $278,000. And listen, I have it for at least a year, maybe a year and a half." This sound far-fetched? Guess what? You've been doing that for almost a year. If you're a taxpayer in the United States, you pay taxes. Your taxes went into a $1 trillion stimulus bill. It's actually $837 billion. Interest puts it over $1 trillion. And a study by the Heritage Foundation just released last week basically says, and this is taking the administration's word for the fact that they actually created or saved 2.4 million jobs, which is highly suspect. But taking their own numbers, you divide that into your stimulus bill that you and I paid for, and it comes out to $278,000 per job. Imagine that. There's other studies out there, by the way, which says it's closer to $360,000 per job. But what's $50,000 or $60,000 to buy a one-year or one-and-a-half-year job, which is all this stimulus bill bought? I mean, basically, it would just propped up state, local, and other governments, hired some federal workers. It certainly didn't do infrastructure jobs, which our president, with a smile and a laugh, said just 2 weeks ago, weren't quite as shovel-ready as we anticipated. Does this make you angry? This is July 4th. Actually, the week after. This is the birthday of our nation. More than that, it's the birthday of a concept. It is the celebration of the idea of individual freedom. You know, you are not free when you owe money. You are not free when you are sagging with debt. You are not free when your government lies to you. You are not free when they tamper with your election process and voting rights. And you are certainly not free when you are paying for somebody else. And unfortunately, in this country, that's exactly where we're at right now. We have a government that doesn't tell us the truth. They either lie to us outright, or they say one thing and do another. You know, the right hand speaks and the left hand doeth. And I didn't pick the right and left just out of curiosity or just as a fluke. We hear right talk, we see left action. We're going to be talking about a number of things today. Not only the hypocrisy in this stimulus bill, which really greased the pockets of union bosses and other special interest groups, and did nothing to create jobs other than temporary jobs at an exorbitant price to all us taxpayers. We're going to be talking about the disparity between those who pay taxes and those who don't, and the concept of skin in the game. We're going to be talking a little bit about this president and some of the things he said, which I will direct you to certain Google searches on. You can listen and hear for yourself. I don't need to put words in his mouth. He does fine on his own. We're going to be talking a little bit about this sleazy mess that's going on with the federal government involved in shipping arms to Mexico. Operation Fast and Furious. We're going to be talking about other matters which, let's face it, folks, we're being told one thing, and if we think with our eyes open, which we really need to do, transpire in just the opposite way. As an example, let's take Iraq, Iran, Syria, and Libya. I would say that that's a troubled region of the world, wouldn't you? And it directly affects us. And it affects us because we don't have an energy policy. Our government has shut down exploration, exploitation, and production of our own natural gas and oil reserves. And did you know that we're the Saudi Arabia of natural gas? We have more natural gas than any other country in the world. And natural gas, by the way, is cheap. It is the cleanest of all the fossil fuels. The production lines and the transmission lines are in across the United States. They're underground, unlike these huge monstrosity power grid lines with 180-foot towers spaced every 1,300 feet being run through wilderness to transmit wind energy that's billed at a 90% subsidy. Boy, hooray for us taxpayers again. And then sold at a 23% surplus to markets that don't need it. We are estimated to have as much oil as Saudi Arabia, but we can't drill for it. Meanwhile, prices rise at the pump. The economy slows ever more. And we are slaves to the environmental left, who just coincidentally are huge campaign contributors to this administration and certain members of Congress. We're going to talk a little bit about Michelle Obama's college thesis and what she says now. And I think I'll have to put in a few words about the current budget situation. This is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the right side. And we have a full plate of things for you to think about. And think you must. The future of this country, your future, and absolutely the future of your children and your children's children are at stake. We're at a tipping point, ladies and gentlemen. Either we're going to get this thing right and go back to the principles so brilliantly put forth by our founders, or the problems we have today are going to seem insignificant to the problems we're going to face tomorrow. And some of those problems could be ugly. Way worse than just not having enough money, not having a job, or having a nation laden with debt and about to be downgraded by the major international credit rating agencies, including Moody's. Let's talk a little bit about the Middle East. We have a president who, on the one hand, admits that We have dauntless enemies out there and vows to bring them to justice and to kill them. On the other hand, he doesn't want to call them Muslim. He doesn't really want to identify him. And he seems to stutter whenever it comes to the word terror. More importantly, he tells these, I'm using his words, tenacious, intelligent enemies exactly what our plans are. We're going to withdraw X amount of troops on this date. Said by him, by the way, before the troops are even on the ground. We're going to draw down to this troop level by this date. Our remaining troops are going to do X, Y, and Z. Tell me, if you're thinking with your eyes open, do you think that that helps us win these conflicts? Or putting aside win these conflicts, how about just have a good outcome? Do you think it keeps our troops safer or less safe? Last week, tragically, we had the bloodiest week in Iraq that we've had in a year. This is during the drawdown of troops. 15 U.S. service people lost their lives. Their blood is on this administration's hands. The same is true over in Afghanistan. You know, on one hand, this administration talks about the UN. They're obviously, although they espouse the ideals of sovereign nations and America being a country, they're all for global government. The recent Libya action, the president has told us, please Google it up. The president has told us, listen, I didn't need to go to Congress. You know, the Constitution, that pesky document. The War Powers Act, a law passed by Congress. Who's Congress? I was authorized by the UN to go into Libya. Even members of his own party, Denis Kucinich, for example, and Denis Kucinich is by no means a right side guy. He's about as left as they come. Was up in arms over this breach of constitutional authority and thumbing the nose at congressional action. Yet, we're in a war that's not a war. We're in an action that's not hostile. We're just dropping bombs on people. We're just flying military jets off of aircraft carriers, launching missiles, killing enemy combatants. That's not a war. Nah, that's a walk in the park. And we're doing it in Libya, ostensibly to save civilian lives. What about Syria? Our Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, just a year ago, please Google it, said that Assad in Syria, the rather brutal dictator who's ruled that country with an iron fist, like his father before him, was a reformer. That's a quote. He wants to do the right thing by his people. There's hope for him. So on one hand, we have a gentleman who was an inconsequential dictator in Libya, Gaddafi, and we go into a non-war, dropping bombs on his army to ostensibly save civilians. We don't go to Congress and ask permission, even after the 60 days which the War Powers Act mandates that we do. And instead, we rely on a United Nations resolution. However, in Syria, where more than 600 people unarmed have been gunned down by troops of Mr. Assad, and thousands more disappeared or imprisoned, we don't support the valiant efforts of those people to overthrow that government. A government, by the way, which is the closest ally to our most mortal enemy in the Mideast, Iran. What kind of hypocrisy is this? More importantly, if you believe that this president is an intelligent guy and he has surrounded himself with intelligent people, put aside the fact that you may or may not agree with his policies, ideologies, or concepts, not all of this can be incompetence. It's impossible. There must be a plan. Let me give you a few dots out there, and you can research this for yourself. You know, I'm not here to tell you how to think. I'm not here to tell you what to think. I'm just here asking that you do think. Think with your eyes open. About a year ago, give or take, the United Nations passed this resolution. It was passed in the General Assembly, overwhelmingly, and the United States voted for it. What it says is, basically, if people are oppressed, other countries have the right to act to end the oppression of the aggressor, even if that aggressor is the government within a sovereign country. You know, on the face of it, that sounds okay, doesn't it? Gee, these poor people are getting beat up by their nasty dictator, and we're going to go in and help. Well, putting aside that we don't have the money, we don't have the manpower, we don't have the military, and actually it's none of our business to be going in to help anybody right now, other than ourselves. How do we get, who makes the decision to apply that concept unequally? That was the concept behind America's involvement in the Libyan engagement. That was the concept behind this administration, in essence, saying the Constitution was less than the Charter of the United Nations and the will of the American people expressed through Congress is less than the edicts of the General Assembly of the United Nations. But he's all for a sovereign America. He's not for global government. Right. You bet. And then we don't apply that same policy in a situation in Syria, which is far more deadly to the civilian population than the Libyan conflict ever was. Why? Make that a why with four question marks. Think about it. Let's tie it into another dot. We all know that Iran is hell-bent on a nuclear program. We have all heard for years, and this includes the Bush administration, I think one of their greatest mistakes, in not doing anything to curtail the nuclear capabilities of a very dangerous Iran. Have you listened to what Ajamadeed says over there? Google it up. Just put in the words Iran, Hajjamadid, or Ayatollah, and 12th Imam. That's I-M-A-M. Read what comes up. Or Google this. Iranian president, destruction of Israel. Or Google this. Iranian president, little Satan, great Satan. Little Satan, by the way, is Israel, and great Satan is you and me, America. It'll take you 5 minutes. You know, when Hitler wrote Mein Kampf back in the 1930s, nobody believed him either. Yet our policy through this administration, who on one hand publicly says, oh, you got to stop this nuclear program, and we got to do sanctions, and we're going to go to the United Nations and do more sanctions. Boy, this United Nations keeps coming up a lot. Global government. But they don't do anything. In the summer of 2009, with millions of Iranians in the street trying to peacefully protest for peace and for democracy, which I think is what we're supposed to stand for, we did nothing. Our president did nothing. 2 years later, in a conflict that doesn't concern us whatsoever, our president thumbs his nose at the Constitution and the Congress and blasts off into Libya, and then, with a straight face, tries to tell us this isn't a war and this isn't hostility. When he does that, he invokes the Save the Oppressed People resolution of the General Assembly. Yet he doesn't invoke it on behalf of the people of Syria, who is Iran's greatest ally. Think about it. Why is this going on? While you're mulling that question, or should we say questions, I'll remind you, you're on the right side with Reed Lance Rosenthal. I'm a rancher. I'm an author. In fact, a number one best-selling author. And very proud of the fact that my novels won 7 national awards this year, including Best Western, Best Romance, and Best Historical Fiction of the Year. That's Threads West, an American Saga. It's available on BarnesandNoble.com, at your local bookstore, or Barnes & Noble. And you can read more about it at www.threadswestamericansaga.com or reedlrosenthal.com. It's all about the American spirit. It's about the adventure and romance of the West wrapped in the silver bolo of the American spirit. And that's a spirit we need to draw on right now, and we need to think as we do so. We need to take the real 2 and the real 2 and add it up to the real 4. Because many of our leaders are telling us that 2 plus 2 is 5. Or 2 plus 2 is 3. And if you're a believer, as I am, that there are no accidents and there are no coincidences, there must be a reason for that. We're going to talk a little bit about that, because I want to lay the groundwork for a number of future shows which are coming your way from the right side. They are fact-driven. I will give you reference points. It's up to you to spend a few minutes on the computer and educate yourself. And don't listen to the pundits, right or left. Don't listen to the commentaries. Hell, don't even listen to me. listen to their own words on video, in speeches, in interviews. The truth is out there for you. And he who knows the truth is well armed. I'm going to give you a few things to look up in your spare time. I know most of us don't have spare time. But look at it this way. If you educate yourself, if you spend 5 or 10 minutes a week just researching, again, listen to what is said. Read speeches. Follow interviews. Nobody's asking you to be a PhD in political science. Nobody's asking you to get a doctorate in ideology. I'm just begging you to employ your common sense. To see with your own eyes the actions of this government as opposed to its words. It's a scary thing. It's a scary thing for you and I. It's absolutely petrifying for our children and children's children. We have a president who, on a cold, wintry day in January 2008, gave a rousing speech in front of 1 million-plus adoring fans in Washington, D.C., as he took the oath of office, which includes the words, "Protect, uphold, and defend the Constitution of the United States from all enemies, foreign and domestic." The Constitution of the United States. That document is a miracle. The folks who wrote it, back there in the 1786, 87, and 88 period, were brilliant or inspired by a force far beyond the intelligence of being simply a man. They got it right. It's worked brilliantly for 235 years. That's right, this was our 235th birthday this July 4th. Happy birthday to us. But remember the words of Benjamin Franklin when they put the final dot on the final T, on the final I, they put the final period at the final sentence. "We've given you a republic, if you can keep it." That, ladies and gentlemen, is our mission, to keep it. Because slowly and surely, over the last 50 to 100 years, its golden principles and guiding lights have been wrested from our sleepy fingers. We've allowed it to happen. It has to end. We need to go back to our values. The values of our founders, the values of those in the Revolution, the values of those who wrote the Declaration of Independence on July 4, 1776, that date that we celebrate, and the values of those who later penned and signed the Constitution of the United States. This president stood on those cold steps in a long black coat, his right hand raised, and swore allegiance to and to protect the Constitution. You want to know the other side? The non-right side? Google up Barack Obama, Constitution, 2001 PBS interview. Listen to it. You don't have to listen to the whole thing, although you can. Let me pull one quote out of that, although you should really hear all the words. This is the same gentleman who swore allegiance to protect the Constitution of the United States in January 2008. His words are, and I quote, "The Constitution is a fundamentally flawed document and merely a covenant of negative rights," end quote. If I have one word out of context or one word juxtaposed, you'll hear that. He'll correct me with his own words. Do you think that's a little bit opposed to the oath he took in 2008? Do you think he's changed his mind? You know, in many ways, you are who you surround yourself with. Think about your kids, or think about the kids you will have. Now, if they're coming home with a bunch of druggies, if they're hanging around with other kids who do drugs, or are continually in trouble, you're probably not going to be too happy about it. If, on the other hand, they're hanging out with, I'll just use a stereotype, clean-cut athletic types who do well in school and, as much as teenagers can, keep their noses clean, you're going to be more happy about it. Welcome to parenthood. Google up Barack Obama, William Ayers, that's A-Y-E-R-S. I think you know who William Ayers is, the unrepentant terrorist who blew up government buildings and police headquarters back there in the 60s and 70s with the Weather Underground and has never apologized. In fact, and I quote, you'll find it on Google, "I wish we had done more," unquote. Google up Valerie Jarrett, J-A-R-E-T-T. She happens to be this president's right hand in the White House, at a rather hefty salary, I might add. And she's from Chicago, just like him. Your eyes will pop when you read her background. The Communist Party, the Socialist Party. That's the good stuff. Google up Van Jones. An admitted revolutionary who's donned a coat and a tie to try and make us think that he's a visionary. Not a visionary, revolutionary. Read his own words. He was the green job czar of Mr. Obama until his real ideologies and philosophies were outed by various commentators on TV and radio, and now works in close concert with George Soros, running several of his numerous sub-organizations. Google up Cass Sunstein. Cass Sunstein is a brilliant attorney. He worked with Mr. Obama. In academia. And he's a brilliant writer of regulations. He's the regulatory czar. Got to read some of his quotes. Google them up. I'm taking just a smattering of folks. We could go on and on. We could spend hours just on this subject, and in future shows, we'll spend a little time in each show. We'll give you two or three people who are and have been and remain the close associates of this administration and several powerful members of Congress. And you can read in their own words what they think. Some of them have even written books like Mr. Sunstein, although now he disavows what he wrote. I have another Google, a fun little Google for you. Actually, it's not fun. It's frightening. It will scare you. Google up Barack Obama National Civilian Security. Now, this is a gentleman who professes a love of democracy, the free expression of the will of the people, the American doctrines of the electorate process. Who says that government shouldn't be tampering in private people's lives? You can think of a dozen actions off the top of your head without the enablement of a search engine to know the disparity of that comment with the actions of its maker. But you will be astounded, perhaps, to know that Mr. Obama is on record. We're talking 2007-2008. You know, this was way back when in 2001. Or way back when in college, when everybody can get a little crazy. Our president believes in a national civilian security force, which, and once again, I quote, give or take a word or two, you can find the exact words there on your search, is stronger, as well-equipped, and as well-financed as the United States Army. Wow. Great. Dynamite. And I guess we get to pay for it as taxpayers, I might add. I'm sure Mr. Obama won't be paying for it out of his pocket. You know, in 2006, this president voted against raising the debt ceiling. And I'm going to digress for just a moment because there seems to be confusion, much of it perpetrated by the folks, quote unquote, running the show right now, and on purpose. Because, you know, somebody who's confused might be misled. Not that they would ever do that. You hear the words deficit, debt, and unfunded liabilities. Let me give you a brief overview of what each of those is, and hopefully this will help. The deficit is the annual amount that the United States government spends, which is in excess of what it brings in. That's the annual budget deficit. The national debt, or as some economists call it, the primary national debt, is the sum total of those deficits over a span of years. That's the number that you hear bandied around right now in the media, which today sits at about $14.4 trillion, increasing, you know, several hundred million a day. What's several hundred million? And then the unfunded liabilities is that amount that they don't like to talk about at all. That's over and above that little $14.4 trillion number. Nobody really has a great handle on that. You can check the budget, the Budget and Accounting Office. You can check the Congressional Record. You can check the General Administration Office, GAO. And here's what you'll find. Unfunded liabilities of the United States of America and some state unfunded liabilities that flow through as a federal problem in the future, total somewhere between 102 and 120 trillion. Let me repeat that. 102 and 120 trillion dollars. Well, why don't we just take something kind of in the middle? 108 trillion. How's that? We'll just agree that unfunded liabilities of the United States government are 108 trillion. Unfunded liabilities, by the way, includes Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and government pensions. Including, by the way, those nice, big, fat, juicy pensions that all our congressmen and senators and the president and other folks in the federal government get at our expense. Even if they leave in disgrace like Anthony Weiner, even if they only serve a year, boy, life is good. Life is good. Now, if you want to, I hate to say have fun, if you want your eyes to widen in dismay, your heart to beat in terror, and your breathing to become very shallow, let's break this down as to what these numbers, which are huge numbers, I mean, they're tough to get your hands around. What do they mean to you and me? What do they mean to your family, to my family? Because in the end, guess who's paying for it? Well, $14.4 trillion, that's our primary national debt, which nobody in Washington, Republicans or Democrats, can seem to agree what to do with. That comes out to like $46,000 per person, give or take a thousand or two. It's real easy. There's 350 million people in the United States, rounded. Divide 350 million into 14.4 trillion. Math doesn't lie. 2 plus 2 is 4. Now, if you have a family of four, that's like $140,000 debt that you have to pay off. That's right. You have to pay off. They call it taxes. That doesn't include the interest on that debt. You're all familiar with how long it takes you to pay off a 30-year mortgage on your house, right? Between principal and interest. It takes 30 years. How do you like having that additional mortgage, $140,000? Boy, let's go to the next step. If you take the $108 trillion, all right, we're taking that median number in unfunded liabilities, and you add the $14.4 trillion to it, our primary national debt, you have a grand total of, give or take, $122 trillion. You know, there's been all sorts of analogies on this. You could stack $1 bills from here to Mars and back. Forget all that. Let me put it in real terms for you. For a family of four, that number represents a figure of approximately $1.1 million. That's right. You're even more broke than you thought because you have a $1.1 million long-term albatross strapped around your neck that's either going to have to be paid or it's going to have to be reduced or a combination of the two. Just do the math. 350 million folks into 122 trillion. And if you have a family of four, take that number and multiply it by four. Oh, goody. And by the way, that doesn't include interest. At 3% a year, just 3%, we're talking about another 4 to 5 trillion a year in unfunded liabilities. In other words, the entire budget of the United States of America is the interest that's accruing on unfunded liabilities each and every year. Well, these are lots of things to think about, and that's all I'm asking you to do. Because it's time we think, and it's time we think with our eyes open. Don't listen to what they say. Watch what they do. If they give you numbers, take a pen out while you're sitting there munching on popcorn and watching TV. Do the math. You'll find many times that the math that you just penned on the paper, which ain't a lie, is not quite the same as what they're trying to tell you on the tube. In the coming weeks, we'll talk more about these paradoxes. The say one thing when it's another, the promise one thing but do another, and the reasons why, including some great guests. Until then, this is Reed Lance Rosenthal on the right side. Stand up for your beliefs. Be secure in your convictions. Think with your eyes wide open. See you next week.
For more information about Reed and his work, please click on the globe in front of you on the webtalkradio.net page. You can also click on his book, Land for Love and Money, and his new best-selling historical western series, Threads West, an American Saga. Watch for the second volume of the saga, Maps of Fate, coming soon. And of course, if you've missed any shows, just click on show archives to catch up. We look forward to seeing you here again next week for another episode of Reed L. Rosenthal on the Right Side.